This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Tuesday, October 5th, 2010. Hello and welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Toastmasters podcast. My name is Bo Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And we have a great show for you today. We have somebody in the house, a real guest in the house. Ryan, who are we speaking with today?
Our guest today is Mr. David Brooks. David Brooks is an award-winning professional speaker and trainer who's taught nearly 100,000 business professionals to speak and write clearly, concisely, and confidently. For three consecutive years, David was the highest-rated trainer with an international seminar company, and he has spoken in 46 U.S. states, all 10 Canadian provinces, and 24 countries.
Wow.
Of special interest to our Toastmasters audience, in 1990, David emerged from a field of more than 25,000 competitors to become Toastmasters World Champion of Public Speaking.
Nice.
Mr. David Brooks, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thanks, Ryan.
Well, welcome, David.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Great to have you with us right off the airplane. We just picked you up in Boston, and here you are in the flesh.
It's great to have you on here.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
All right, well, let's get to the meat of the interview here and what we're going to be talking about. Today, we are talking about the essentials of effective public speaking. You are doing this speech at, it's not really a speech, is it? It's more of a presentation, a lecture, a seminar? What do you define it as?
Workshop, seminar.
Workshop, hey, whatever we want to call it. Anyways, it's the essentials of effective speaking, and you have seven different points. Unfortunately, two of the points don't work too well without visuals, so we're going to be talking about five. And Ryan, I think you would agree that five essentials of effective speaking is more than enough.
Hey, if you get those five down, you're good.
Let's do it. Let's talk about number one, starting with the first one. Number one, the audience is not the enemy. Why not?
Well, a lot of people get nervous before they speak. That's very common. That's why most people come to Toastmasters, is to get over that fear of speaking. When I ask what they're afraid of, they say they're typically afraid that they're going to mess up. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? They will. I do every time that I speak. I mess up. I don't care if I mess up because I know the audience is going to forgive me. As long as I don't do it so often, so frequently, that it appears that I did not take the preparation seriously.
Ooh, right.
So if I care enough to prepare and I can present news they can use in an entertaining and memorable fashion, then I've met their expectations coming in. They're not coming in to any presentation expecting perfection. That's not possible. It's not going to happen. All right. They want is excellence, and I can give them that, and so can you. Anybody can give an excellent presentation as long as they give themselves permission to mess up every now and then. And the audience will give you comfort and support. They will give you reassurance with visual cues. When you're in front of a person face-to-face, you can see the nods of agreement, just like I'm seeing Ryan do right now. When you make a point that they agree with, when you make a point, they'll nod and they'll smile. You'll see the sparkle in their eyes. You'll see the corner of the mouth turn up in a positive way. And that gives you the comfort to know that if you do fumble or stumble or trip or fall, as mm-hmm. all of us have and all of us will, mm-hmm. they will forgive you. As long as you don't do it so often that it appears to be careless.
Right. Now, does this work with every audience, or does it work with only audience that actually want to come hear you speak? For example, if there are, you're dealing with high school kids that really would rather be in recess. Do they still have recess in high school?
I think so.
All right. Well, some kind of break. But instead, they have to come see David Brooks talk about whatever. Are we talking about the same rules, or do the rules change?
Well, their expectations may be different depending on the circumstance or the message. For example, when I say the audience is not the enemy, that does not apply in politics.
Right.
Now, when you're dealing with a political speech,
right.
sure. you have people that are going to inherently want to see you bomb.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But in general business presentations, they don't. They want good information. The audience doesn't come in saying, I hope the speaker is lousy. I can't wait to see him fail.
Right.
Have you ever seen a speaker that was just truly awful? One that was they just was so bad.
Right.
Did you enjoy him?
No, and I told Ryan the next day that his speech was lousy.
The point is, they don't want you to be bad. They want you to be good, even if they don't like the message, and even if they don't like the circumstance, they still don't want a bad presentation.
Right. At the very least, they want to be entertained and not bored out of their mind, right?
Exactly.
All right. Clear enough. Let's move on to number two. Number two here you have on your list is determine what you want the audience to think, feel, or do. Can you expand on that a bit?
Well, sure. I contend that this is a step that most speakers skip, and they never should. Most speakers will get up and say, I know my material, I'm going to get up and wing it.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever, I think the past tense would be wung. Have you ever wung one?
I tried.
Yeah, didn't go too well.
Did it go well? A few speakers are extemporaneously gifted. They're rare. Most people cannot just get up and be eloquent without preparation. So you have to determine what you want the audience to think, feel, or do before you're ready for step number three, which we'll get to in a few minutes. But if you think about the possibilities of why you stand to speak, you can speak for four basic purposes, and you can figure them out. What are they? You can speak to
entertain,
motivate,
to entertain,
to inform,
or
to touch,
to make cry,
to inspire, or to entertain. So inform, persuade, inspire, or entertain.
I think we got two of those, Ryan. That's pretty good.
That's a start.
50%.
And it can be a combination of, it can be one by itself, it can be a combination of two, three, or all four, but it's got to be at least one.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you test that is to apply what I call the business card test. The business card test means you should write on the back of your business card, assuming there's no printing on the back,
mm-hmm.
you should write on the back of your business card what your purpose is, what you want the audience to think, feel, or do. Now, why do you think I would say put it on a business card?
Because it needs to be short and concise.
Exactly. Right. It's big enough for about one handwritten sentence. So you should be able to write, when you're ready to speak, if you can write, I will persuade the audience to blank. I will inform them of blank. I will entertain them by blank. Or I will inspire them to blank.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can say that in one sentence, then you might be ready. You might be ready for the step number three.
Which is, write your speech word for word. Now, I got to tell you, I got a problem with this. Writing my speech word for word, I am not the write your speech word for word type of guy. So, David, tell
that's
me why
I should
why
be. David's at where he's at and you're at where you're at, though.
That's right. Look on my shelf over there. You see that world champion? No, you don't. All right. So, why should I do that? Or anybody else, for that matter?
Perhaps after I inform you of a few reasons, I can persuade you to give it a try.
Mm. All right, go for it.
So that's my business card statement for this next
inform
phrase.
Inform and persuade.
I will inform you of three reasons why I recommend writing your speech word for word is a good idea and persuade you to give it a try. I'm not saying that if what you do works for you that you should change it,
mm-hmm.
but I hope that you'll at least give this a try. One, writing your speech encourages economy and precision. Economy is using the fewest words and precision is using the best. Now, can you think of an example of a speech that exhibits both economy and precision that is famous in American history?
The Gettysburg Address.
Exactly. The Gettysburg Address is the perfect example. It's only a total of 238 words, and they're 238 exceptionally well-chosen words. That's the reason they endure.
Yeah, but Lincoln had a teleprompter.
I don't think so.
So that's not fair.
I don't think so. In fact, I'll explode a myth for you. Many people have heard this. Maybe you have. Lincoln wrote the Gettysburg Address where?
On his Mac.
No. Many people believe the story that is it's relatively common to hear. He wrote it while traveling on the train, and he wrote it on the back of an envelope. Mm-hmm. And both are false.
Mm.
If you go to Google or any other good search engine and you put Gettysburg Address drafts in, you will see several scholarly sites that will show you earlier drafts and even later versions of the Gettysburg Address.
Oh, interesting.
And it's fascinating to see because you get to see what Lincoln took out.
Right.
Of some of his earlier versions. You see, writing a speech, I contend, is like what a sculptor does to a big block of granite. He stands in front of the granite and doesn't say, what can I add to it? It's, what can I take away?
Mm.
And that's what I recommend writing a speech is all about. You have to create something in rough form by writing it, and then you go in with editing, and you take out everything that is unnecessary so that you get the best and the fewest words.
Gotcha. So does that mean if you had a 10-minute time allotted to you, you would write a speech 12 minutes, 15 minutes, and then start chiseling away? What do you recommend in terms of time?
First, you need to know how fast you speak, your average rate of speech. Do you know what it is, average rate of speech, words per minute? In the U.S., average rate of speech for women is 150 words per minute. Men, slightly slower, 125. The rate that I'm going right now, the rate that you're talking right now, 165 to 175. Now, why are we going a little faster? Because if we speak in a normal 125 words a minute rate, as
we're
going to
bore
exactly in the gaps. In the gaps, the listeners can plan their next day, and they will.
Right.
So as a result, you go a little faster than normal conversational speech when you're making a presentation, because you know how fast people can listen?
Twice that fast.
Actually, it's about four times as fast.
Wow.
You can hear and understand 600 words a minute. And if you want to test that, just go to a cocktail party someday and be talking to a person face-to-face and then listen to the conversations on each side of you and tell me that you can't understand all three. And tell me you haven't done that. So by going a little faster, you can cover more ground. That's a given. So if you say that you're asked to give a 10-minute speech, and let's assume 150 is your rate of speech, then that means that you can comfortably expect to cover 1,500 words. If you get up and just wing it, you might get 750 words that hit and another 750 that miss. So you're giving up half of your potential effectiveness by winging it. If you have edited it for its most concise form, then you can cover more ground in less time. So I contend that if you know your rate of speech and the amount of time that you are to speak, you sit down and write what you want to say. You put it, if you're writing it using a program like Word, you just go to the word count. You see how many words you've written. If you say, well, I have 1,500 at my disposal, I've already written 3,000, then obviously you have to go take out every other word or some other form of editing. But if you've only, if you've covered everything that you thought that you could possibly have covered, and you've written everything that you wanted to say, and you realize you've written only 500, then you realize that you have to have a lot of time for questions and answers. Or would be better for you to go back in and expand on those points, so that you can write to fit the time allotted. So if you know your rate of speech and your time, you can write to fit the window, plus or minus a minute every time.
Does this mean, David, that we should then memorize the speech and try to deliver it word for word as we scripted it?
That's a great question. And no, I'll tell you, I did. When I first started speaking, I did try to memorize speeches. And that is a mistake. Okay. The reason that you don't want to memorize is because you're focusing on yourself. Now, Cavett Robert founded the National Speakers Association. He was the 1942 or 43, I should know this, but it's one of the two, 42 or 43 Toastmasters world champion of public speaking as well. And Cavett Robert said that you should go through three phases of development as a speaker. Phase one is concerned about self. How do I look? How do I feel? How do I sound? And that's where everybody is. That's where we started with this program. The audience is the enemy because they're waiting for me to screw up. No, they're not. It's about them. It's not about you. So if you're an inexperienced speaker, then you're going to be worried about phase one, concern about self. But he said that's where average speakers are. Good speakers move to concern about message, and that's what we're talking about now, writing the message so that it is clear, concise, precise, and no wasted effort. So that's phase two. Phase three, though, relates to your question about memorization. He said great speakers move beyond concern about self, beyond concern about message, they move to concern about the audience. Are they getting it? How are they reacting and responding to it? And so if you look at memorization, that's a phase one step. That's one where you're saying, I want to be perfect because I want them to be impressed with me. And sure, you don't want them to be unimpressed, but your goal is not to be the star. The message is the star. And so if you've written your message well and you've edited it so it's nice and concise, then you are concerned about the audience. And that's where you get that permission again to mess up. If you mess up, the audience isn't going to care as long as they're getting news they can use. And so instead of memorizing, which is selfish, instead I recommend that you internalize. And internalization is, memorization is every word in the right order. Internalization is every idea in the right place. And you can be rough with your transitions. It's not desirable, but you get a lot more flexibility, a lot more latitude. You can be more persuasive and more expressive because you're being more natural if you're worried about internalizing your message instead of memorizing.
Gotcha. Well, I think you sold me, David, because I was concerned about actually delivering the speech word for word, that you were eventually going to get to that. And I cannot do that for the same reason that you said. When I see an audience, I like to respond to them. And if I see people falling asleep, I know I have to change my concept. I know I have to step up my game. I know I have to do something a little bit different to engage the audience as opposed to just deliver something to them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I'm with you on that one. All right. I'll buy it.
You want them over.
All right. So number, actually the fourth one here. Six words that can change the way you speak. David, what are those six words?
Well, this is something that I heard at a Toastmasters convention. In 1992, Bill Gove was giving the general session address on Saturday afternoon. Mm-hmm. He had been given the Golden Gavel Award the year before. He came back to give the general session address. And mm-hmm. he said something that I thought was profound. I don't know if it was originally his concept. I doubt it was. But nevertheless, he's the person I heard it from, so I give him credit as the source that I have.
Mm-hmm.
He said, public speaking is simply this. Make a point, tell a story. He said, that's it. Don't make it any harder than that. That's mm-hmm. public speaking. He said, if you think about it, all great teachers do that. All great preachers do that. All great politicians, all great business people. Any communicator uses that technique. And I thought, well, that's great advice if you have a big story. And I'm about to save all of your listeners here about 4 years of agony if they're thinking about this make a point, tell a story concept in the mm-hmm. same way that I did when I heard it.
Right.
I heard him say that in 1992, and I thought, well, that's great if you have the big story, and I didn't.
Right.
And so I thought, I can't do that until I go out and climb Mount Everest, until I go out and conquer cancer,
right? Right.
Until I go do something monumental and awe-inspiring. Then one day, 4 years later, I was reading the morning newspaper, and I saw a trivia column that said, every human being alive experiences happiness, sadness, anger, surprise, disgust, and fear. And the moment that I read those six emotions, that's when I thought of Bill Gove's six words, make a point, tell a story. I brought the two thoughts together, and that's the moment that I got it. And it took me 4 years to get it. But I, that day, stopped giving speeches, per se, and mm-hmm. instead, I started becoming a storyteller. What kind of stories? The stories that trigger those six emotions. And so I have found now that it's not the big monumental life-changing moment. Mm-hmm. Sure, we're inspired when we hear that. Well, let's face it, you were at Toastmasters convention a couple of years ago when there was a speaker that had climbed Everest.
Yep.
Did it inspire you?
I didn't listen to the speech.
Well,
but I was there physically.
I can tell you, it was entertaining, but right. Was it inspiring? That is inspiring enough to prompt action? Or in other words, have you done it?
Right.
Did you say, oh, I'm going to go do that too? Well, we're entertained and we're impressed by people that have done these things.
Mm-hmm.
But have you ever been in front of an audience have you ever seen a speaker in front of an audience stand up and say, hey, I just quit smoking after 30 years and people applaud?
Mm-hmm.
Or I lost 30 pounds in the last 6 months and people applaud. Mm-hmm. Why? It's because it's an attainable goal. Mm-hmm. It's one
right.
that they might actually be prompted or inspired to act on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the little vignettes that trigger the universal emotions that are more likely to make a connection with the audience. May not be quite as impressive, but more helpful.
So you don't have to be a superhero, but just a hero.
Well, you just have to do
an
something
everyday
that,
hero.
You have to do something that is important enough to you to be able to share it with others, and something that hopefully will inspire them to take action.
Great. All right, and wow. Finally, number six, or number five on our number five on our list. Six emotions that can connect with any audience.
And I just told those to you.
Oh, nice. Look at that.
All right, we're done.
Now we'll talk about listening skills. those six emotions, happiness, sadness, anger, surprise, disgust, and fear. Those are the six. And if you can tell a little story, mm-hmm. a little vignette, mm-hmm. and it can be as short as 30 seconds, that triggers one of those emotions, you will connect.
Great. Mm. Good stuff.
Fantastic.
And the other two, why don't you just quickly mention the other two, even though we understand that you don't have the visuals with us. What are those? The bring life to your words.
Another reason, the third reason why I recommend writing your speeches is because writers have a tendency to be more colorful with their language because they choose their words, especially using what two parts of speech to be used to add color to our language?
Adjectives.
And?
And adverbs?
And adverbs, exactly. But adjectives,
that was a lucky guess.
Adjectives and adverbs are two parts of speech that we frequently leave out in spoken language. Right. Unless we make an effort to put them in, they don't come normal and natural in our speech. We use the article adjectives, a, an, or the, of course, all the time.
Sure.
But we don't add the colorful adjectives, except when we sit down and put fingers on keyboard or pen on paper. Likewise with very, with adjectives, the one that we use is very, which we really should not. That's the one adverb that everybody has a tendency to use and abuse. And in fact, I contend that the word very, I learned this by reading a quotation from Mark Twain. I'm hesitating here because there is one word of slight profanity, just in case this is an issue you may have to beep it. But Mark Twain said, and I'm paraphrasing, but Mark Twain said, any time that you're tempted to use the word very, you should cross it out, insert the word damn.
Right.
And he said, when you turn it in, your editor will then take out the profanity and your writing will be as it should have been. But if you will put your fingers on keyboard or pen on paper, then you're more likely to be able to add the color that we're frequently overlooking when we speak. Then if you can speak it that way, then it makes you sound so much more colorful and persuasive.
Gotcha. And don't underestimate the power of
laughter.
Laughter.
The power of humor.
There we go. How could you underestimate that possibly? Well, good stuff. This is The Essentials of Effective Speaking, a program that David does on occasion. And where can we find out more information about you, David?
You go to my website, davidbrookstexas.com. And do add the word Texas, otherwise you'll go to an entirely different place. But go to davidbrookstexas.com. And if you look up in the bar up at the top, there's a button called Resources, and there's a ton of free stuff up there that I encourage all of your listeners to go to and download. You can use it in your club newsletters, use it in your company newsletters. Just let me know that you want that. Ask for permission. I will give it. I just like to know where it is being circulated.
Very good. And what if we don't want the free stuff? What if we want the good stuff, that we have to pay for? Do you have that stuff on your site as well?
There's a button right beside it called Products.
Yeah. So what's your hottest product, your biggest selling product that you recommend these days?
The product that I've had the most success and satisfaction with is one called Magic Moments. And it's two DVDs in which I have studied and analyzed every world championship finalist's speech appeared in the finals between 1990 and 2003. And I took those speeches apart, studying every one of them to say, well, the 7 minutes may not have been great, but there were 7 seconds in it that was incredible. So I've pulled out individual specific speaking skills. If you want to see the best use of hands, the best use of face, best use of stage movement, then I've isolated those. And it's incredible learning because, one, I'm able to teach by showing what other people did better than I could have told them.
Right.
That's good. And you can get that at your site as well.
Yes. Correct? It's under the products. It's called Magic Moments. You can also download the transcription of it. If you want to just read it, you can download the transcription of it also from the website under the Resources tab.
Nice.
Perfect.
David, I also want to ask, obviously, we just did a Cliff Notes version of a full program that you're presenting this evening. So do you have any particular resources for folks who aren't in the Boston area and aren't able to attend your presentation tonight so that they can get some of the content we covered on the show today?
I do have a recorded version in MP3 form of the program I'm doing tonight as I recorded it a couple of years ago in Vancouver. It was one of those events in which there was a good audience, I had a good recorder, and I have a decent recording of that program. So the one I'm doing tonight, they can get from me on an MP3 download. If they want to know about it, just send me an email, and I'll tell them how to order it. It's not even on my site. It's something that's recent. I just recently got it.
Okay.
But I can tell them how to get it if they just email me and let me know that they want the MP3 download of the 8 Essentials.
Wonderful.
Perfect.
All right. Good stuff. David Brooks, the 1990 World Champ of Public Speaking, thank you so much for coming down to our studio all the way from Texas just to do this podcast.
That's it.
we appreciate it very much. And Ryan, how could people give us feedback if they like?
If you'd like to leave us some feedback on this or any other episode, you can give us a call at our listener feedback voicemail line, 1-888-451-8862. You can send us an email, podcast@toastmasters.org, or post to your comments on our blog at toastmasterspodcast.com.
All right, wonderful. And until next time, my name is Bo Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Thanks again, David. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. at ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.